Hello and welcome. It's been a week since the Class 12 CBSE results were announced, and the headline, of course, was that the topper scored 499 out of 500. Seven students scored 497 out of 500 at third place, which means that there were 12,737 students who scored more than 95 and above. 72,000 students scored 90 and above. Now, compared to last year, 10,000 more students scored above 90%, and 9,000 more students scored 90% and above. Now, what is going on? Does this mean that over the years, the system is churning out smarter students? Do these high scores signify the ability to think and solve problems? If students are getting near perfect scores, does this mean that they're learning better? Does this mean that our youth is getting smarter, more well-informed, just more literate in general? Or does it mean that they're just better note-takers and rote learners? And what does this mean for college cutoffs then, which at the top colleges right now is already above 97%? To wrap our heads around all of this, we have on the show tonight Aatishi Marlina. She's a former advisor on education to the Aam Aadmi Party-led Delhi government. Her appointment was cancelled this year following an advisory from the Union Home Ministry in April. We have Arjit Ghosh. He's a vice president of the Education Quality Foundation of India. Varun Agarwal, author and co-founder of Aspiring Minds, one of the largest employability assessment and job credentialing companies in the country. Sunita Nagpal, principal of DPS, Shushant Lok, CB Sharma, who is the chairman of the National Institute of Open Studies, Reena Dhaka, designer and parent, and Deepak Raheja, psychiatrist, joining us. All right, Arjit, if you can answer my opening question, right? Who would have thought that we would reach a time when we have the results out and here we are doing a show where we're concerned not on the poor performance of students, but on the skyrocketing number of high-performing students. So what is going on here? Are the papers just getting simpler, or should I say dumber, or are our students getting smarter?
Well, there are a couple of different perspectives to this. One is definitely today's generation of students are more well-informed because of the more they being digital natives. So one is the knowledge accumulation rate, or the knowledge accumulation per se, is much higher as compared to, as time goes on, there will be more knowledge seekers and no knowledge accumulators. But again, on the other hand, it's something which we need to take into account is the application of that knowledge. So how well are they applying the knowledge in real life? So that makes us wonder about the structure or the design of the question papers. About 40 to 45% of a typical question paper caters to the lower order thinking skill questions. If you look into the real application-based questions, it is about 10%, 8 to 10% of the question paper. So that there lies the chief problem.
So you're saying it's rote learning and not actual knowledge of how to use what you've learned, implement it.
Exactly. So the real-life connect, even in the examination, is something which is missing.
So, why are the boards doing this?
Well, that is something. In a large country like India, in CBSE, about more than 2.8 million students appeared in this year's examination, class 10, class 12 taken together. So if you, first of all, the standardized testing, that one size fits all approach, that approach basically is not a perfect one. So if you have to keep that as a constant, if you presume that is the constant, then probably what CBSE doing is the best to their ability. But the starting premise is somewhere where we need to delve deeper.
Okay, because then how do you gauge students? At some point, you have to compare a student in the north with a student in the south. So you do need to have one central exam. But Sunita, you know, come in here, like, you know, all this is okay. You studied English literature at Lady Shriram College, my alumni. So perhaps you can answer this. You're a principal of a school that is known to churn out these high achieving students when it comes to marks. That's why parents also try to put their kids into DPS. But how can you get 99 and 100 in subjects like English and psychology, where you're supposed to be tested on, you know, creativity and on an imagination, where there's really possibly no right answer? It's certainly, you know, you can't give marks to these answers, can you?
So here when you're saying, Sara, I feel what has happened over the years. When I was a student, you all are much younger, but when I was a student, it was all about creativity. And that is what should be assessed first. Over the years, things have happened. The numbers have gone up everywhere, whether it's the students appearing in the exams, whether it's people getting educated, numbers have gone up. Our institutions haven't increased in comparison. And so the rat race began where you had to achieve higher marks. And I think somewhere along the line, these boards fell into a trap to give high marks so that there was an elimination process at the senior level, at the level of university education. And so this, I think, is like whether the chicken came first or the egg. So as a principal, I would like my students not to be running after the marks, but I can't tell them that.
Yeah, because your school actually churns out students who do manage to crack the system.
Yes, but at the same time, if you meet my students, you will find them very well informed, very much people of the world, very aware, because we are trying to give them very wholesome education. I don't at any point of time advocate that they should be getting the highest in the country. We don't speak that language. I don't think any principal speaks that language. But the system, like Arijit said, one size fits all. The system exists. So the poor child, wherever he is or she is, at whatever level, is required to fit into that straitjacketed system. So they're all running up the ladder trying to reach the topmost rung.
Okay, so now while these perfect scores are worrisome, there is some good news. For once, the toppers are from humanities, right? But the real big story has been the performance of government schools in the capital. They have outperformed private schools for the second year in a row. And we have Atshi Marlina joining us. Atshi, congratulations to you and the Aam Aadmi Party with a pass percentage of 90.68%.
Thank
you, Delhi government schools have outperformed private institutions, which have recorded a pass percentage of 88.35%. They've also recorded the second best overall performance of government schools across India. That's behind Thiruvananthapuram, the state with the highest literacy, where the pass percentage has been 99.11%. So congratulations, Atishi. And tell us, for years, you know, we've been writing off government schools. We've allowed private schools to come up in the process. And then we have cases of parents complaining that they're being fleeced for fees, etc., etc. Why and how have you managed to turn this around?
See, I think one of the reasons, Sarah, why government schools have really fallen apart is because there have been a systematic neglect of government schools. In fact, I've often said this, but if you see, the very people who have been charged with running the government school system, that is politicians and bureaucrats, often have interests in private schools. So many politicians actually run private schools, have chains of private schools. So many retired bureaucrats are on the managing committees of private schools. So the very people who were supposed to ensure that the public school system, the government school system, runs well, actually have vested interests in promoting private schools. So I think that a lot of the initiatives that have come from the Aam Aadmi Party, I don't think that there's a lot of rocket science involved in those initiatives. What we are seeing is political will behind improving the government school system.
So what did it take? Like on the ground?
Infrastructure, it means having...
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
So multiple things. It means that we have actually improved the infrastructure. There was a shortage of rooms. So if there's 100 students sitting in a classroom, not even the best teacher can actually teach them well. There's been a lot of focus from our end on training for teachers. Number three, there is, I think one of the things we must remember is that students from government schools do not have any support outside of the school system. They're often coming from families that may not even be literate. So we have been focusing a lot on providing extra classes to students, especially in the board years, and even providing them support material, which otherwise private school students might actually be buying from the market. So worksheets, question papers, etc. So the focus really has been on how we can provide support to these students who might be actually coming from disadvantaged families.
But, you know, Atishi, there has been some criticism where some have said that there's been a lot of culling in grade 9, where the weaker students have been sent to OPAL schooling instead. And that's how they've achieved these high grades.
Actually, this crisis of class 9 exams is not just a crisis that Delhi faces. This is a part of a larger learning crisis that exists in our schools. You know the fact that every year in January, Pratham releases their ASSAR report, which says that 50% of children cannot even read and write. Now, when 50% of children cannot read and write, and despite that they are promoted year on year as per the no detention policy up to class 8, when they reach class 9, the gap between their the expectations of the syllabus and the examination and their own learning levels is extremely vast. And in fact, for addressing this question is why Delhi government has started a number of programs like Mission Bunyad, where we are teaching children in grade 6, 7, 8 and 9 actually how to read and write.
So the no holding back
as far as an open school
policy is also disturbing and troubling.
No, absolutely. And as far as the open schooling question is concerned, the open schooling is actually a choice we are giving to students who have already failed more than twice in 9th standard and are unable to clear the CBSE exam. Because in open schooling, you can actually carry forward credit. So if students have cleared 2 subjects in CBSE, they just need to clear 3 more papers in the open school. So the open schooling actually prevents students from dropping out of the system.
Okay, so you stand by your decision if those critics are saying that you've asked kids to move out of the system and then go in for open schooling. But I want to go across
those,
to Prince.
Those Prince, kids would actually have been outside the system if they had not been going to open schools.
Okay, and we have Prince here joining us. He is the class 12 topper from Delhi of the government schools, correct? And that's his father here, who is a DTC bus driver. And this is Prince. And Prince, you managed this, ye sab aapne kiya, and this year, while you were studying in your class 12, aapko pata chala ki aapko tuberculosis hai, TB hai.
Yes, ma'am.
So how did you manage?
Support parents ka aur mummy papa ka, the school staff supported me so well that I didn't feel at any point of year that I am sick or I am suffering from tuberculosis. My parents are very emotionally connected with me. They never tell me that I am a tuberculosis patient. And my sister is also very good. She always play with me. She teaches me how to do yoga. That's how I is.
That's your sister?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, they say it takes a village to bring up a child. But you were saying you do yoga, she taught you, she used to play with you. Did you have time for all this? Because, you know, honestly, the criticism is that in this system, especially like maybe in government schools, when you have so much to catch up on, you're not playing, you're not doing yoga. You're just sitting in one place and studying all the time.
No, we have been creating the phobia of boards so much that the student can't play. The parents think, they have been bored in this year, so they can't play. They have to study all the time. If they are going school for 8 hours, 16 hours left, they have to study for 8 hours more. But I want to tell everybody that 8 hours is more than enough. 8 hours in school and 2 hours at home is more than enough. If you are studying 2 hours very consciously, that is enough.
Okay. Would you say this is because you are, you know, genetically or genuinely an intelligent child, or you're saying that the system has helped you, things have changed in government schools?
The system has helped me. I'm not a bio student, so that I don't know about genetically being intelligent or not. So I can't tell that.
Acha, jab when we have this discussion, agar aap keh rahe the, if you've been doing well right now, you must have been doing well all these years. At no point did you ask your parents or should I ask your father? At no point, aapne nahi socha ki, you know, isko private school mein dal dete hai, kyunki itna bright hai, he's doing so well, shayad aur better karega, I mean, 97 se aur better, to mujhe pata nahi hai kya hai. Magar, aapne socha nahi ki private school mein dalne ke liye?
Nahi, shuru se hi jo tha, ye sarkari school mein padh raha tha, to shuru se hi achhe score kar raha tha, matlab achhe class mein first aa raha tha, to main socha, magar jab yahi first aa raha hai, to kyun private school mein, bhi wahan bhi first hi aana hai.
And that's true, you've actually cracked the IIT JE exams already. So you're going to IIT?
No, it's advanced result is awaited on 10th. The result will be announced on 10th June.
Okay, best of luck. I'm sure you'll make your family proud there too. But what about you? Which class are you in?
Ma'am, I've just completed my graduation from Dal Singh College. Now I'm pursuing MBA from IB University.
And what do you say about this whole discussion about government schools versus private schools?
Ma'am, according to me, government schools are better because I'm all. मैंने खुद government school से ही पढ़ाई की है, तो मुझे वही ज़्यादा better लगता है क्योंकि उसकी in future क्योंकि mom dad का भी इतना वो हो नहीं पाता था government servant dad, तो उसके लिए हमें private school में जाने का इतना बनी नहीं पाता था कि हम लोग private school में जा पाए, तो हमने यही सोचा कि हम इन फ्यूचर भाई का तो था कि हाँ ये अच्छा कर रहा है, और मेरा भी ऐसे था कि मैं कॉमर्स की स्टूडेंट थी तो मीन्स हम गवर्नमेंट स्कूल में बेटर फील करते थे.
Congratulations. Varun, but what are the repercussions of this when we have so many students coming out, being churned out every year with such high scoring marks? Are they employable in the real world?
So, you know, we have been doing this exercise of testing people on their job skills now for since 2010. So it's been a lot of years. Then they're done on a standardized test called AMCAT. So what happens in the standardized test really is that you can compare the performance from one year to the other year, which you cannot do in the CBSE exam. So you really don't know that if people are scoring more, are their skills increased or they are just, you know, the test became easier.
Right.
So what we find is that the skills of the people have not really changed in these 10 years as far as the job skills are concerned. And if you look at the job skills, there are four larger buckets. And there are two of these which we feel that the school should provide and the other the higher education institutions should provide. The first one is the language skills, which is English, both in the spoken and the written form. And the way the economy today is, if in the knowledge economy you need a job, you need to have good spoken English, good written English. If we see graduates, we find that not more than 30% have the spoken English or written English skills, which can get them a job in the knowledge economy.
But they have the marks in the CBSE, ICSE, the boards.
They have the marks, right? And the marks are continuously escalating, which is, I think, due to competition among boards, right? So one board is easier, another board has the incentive to become easier. So that
That's
their students can get into colleges.
So CBSE and ICSE competing with each other
and many state boards
State boards also, the students are paying the price.
You know, if they really want to see whether skills are improving or not, there's a scientific process of constructing the test so that you can compare results year on year. And Pratham, for example, does it more scientifically. So that is a better mirror of whether students are improving or not than CBSE. And as, you know, one of the panelists made a comment, the second skill which we think the school should bring, which companies care for, are the cognitive skills of the people. You know, their problem-solving skills, their analytical skills. And again, we see, for example, if you see a job of an accountant, we find that if you look at BCom graduates, only 20% have the cognitive skills which are required for the job of an accountant. And these skills are, again, something which we feel that the school should be providing, right? And again, this is because your exams are rote learning based. They are not really application based. These skills get developed when people do more applied things. They could be doing a numerical or application of a concept and so on.
And why are schools not doing it? They don't have time?
So
the syllabus is too large? What is it?
No, I think, see, rote learning is easy for everyone, right? It is easier for the teacher. It is easier for the student. And it's easier to get marks. So if you degrade it to rote learning, everyone is happy in the system, right? But having said that, what I would say is that if you look at the CBSE exam, for example, they need to have both knowledge-based and conceptual questions. Because finally, people who have a certain level of knowledge and some little application also deserve to pass the exam and not be thrown out of the system. But the way the exam is built today, it cannot distinguish people at the top. So someone who has a 98 score versus a 90 score, we cannot say that the person with 98 score is better than the one with 90 score.
Yeah.
Right, because the application questions are very few and they're not, they don't give enough discrimination, right? So if you really want to solve this, then as IIT solves it and having two exams, which is a first exam which is easier, which kind of helps you segregate people for all the different colleges, and then a second exam which is harder, which kind of helps you segregate at the top, which is required. So today the problem with CBSE is that in DU you have all these high cutoffs and they say, hey, cutoff is 94. With the assumption that a student who has more than 94 is better than a student who has less than 94. But CBSE cannot discriminate at that level. It can say that a student who's at 90 is better than a student who's at 70. But it cannot say that a student who's at 96 is better than a student at 90. So that is what I think is the crisis of CBSE. And why people are in a rat race, I think, again, it comes from higher education. Because we have a few colleges which are very, very good. Correct. Right? And then there are all demand these colleges supply, which are not good at all. So everyone wants to get into these good colleges where education is subsidized. Right? And that's why there's that rat race. So if we can improve the quality of higher education, that solves some of the problem.
But it's a vicious circle. There's knowledge versus application skills. So what do parents do? Let's speak to some parents. You've actually chosen to homeschool your kids.
Yeah, that's right.
You're Gaurav and Arbuda Pal, and you have two kids.
Yes.
And you chose to homeschool them.
Yeah, up till fifth grade, we actually send them to school. They have been to some of the finest schools in India and outside India. But after that, we realized that we don't want to outsource this to somebody where we don't have the faith on the system. I think our decision has been further strengthened by what we've heard from the audience about the system and the rat race and the mark race and all.
Papers leaking this year, math papers, economics papers. So you were sitting back at home and saying, see, let me tell all the neighbors. I told you so.
Yeah. I think the real problem is that the education system has been excessively commercialized. When we see the top league colleges even in India or schools in India, all of them were started with a noble cause of philanthropic approach behind that, whether we talk about SSCC or Hindu or Stephens and all. Now what we see is a complete industry behind it.
Mm.
And a lot of high marks, I also feel that are reason to please the parents. You know, when we went to school, when we used to score 70, 75, our parents used to feel happy.
Mm.
Now when our kids go to school, we say, we used to score 75, you should score more. And schools have found a very easy way to please the parents. We now, when go to the parent-teacher meeting in the school, we find that every student of the class got one or the other certificate, medal from the school. And they all of them are categorized in a very high grade, you know. All of them are 80% plus. And that's one of the way where all the parents feel that
so there's grade inflation, which is also what's happening at the level of the board. But you know, I'm sure there are parents who are asking, all this is fine and good, but it means a lot of time investment, right? And how many parents have that kind of time? You have to physically teach your children yourself.
Correct.
And what's your background?
See, I have a background in terms of
education.
Yeah, I'm MSc.
Because I certainly can't teach class 4 math, also I would not be able to teach my child.
Yeah. I've done MSc in botany. And I've been working with my husband. We have our own venture. So till the time my kids were going to school, I was going to office. And then I left. I'm still working from home.
And both of you went to IIT?
I went to IIT.
You went to IIT, okay.
So, yes. Now I'm running my own bakery.
So now as the kids are older, are you still teaching them? Because it's tougher in...
Yes, I do.
In other classes.
Yeah, I do take care of their studies. Because they will be academically evaluated, so we have to be prepared for the exams.
Okay, so not all parents may be able to take out the time, but that's your son?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so how do you feel about being homeschooled? Do you miss out on going to a regular, quote-unquote, school?
No, actually I like doing homeschooling.
Why?
I get opportunities I can do things that I like. I like origami. I can do origami when I have time. I like playing guitar. I can play guitar. So that's what I like.
Okay. Your daughter's also here. What about you? So what about, I'm sure people think, you know, you don't go to school, the school bus rides, sharing of tiffins, those sorts of things that one associates with schools. You don't miss out on that?
No, actually, I go for a walk with my mom in the mornings and I see children going to school. And I tell my mom that somebody tells their parents that there's some thing like homeschooling. So I'm like, I love homeschooling.
Okay, great. Reena Dhaka is another parent who, you didn't homeschool your kids.
No, I wouldn't have managed much if I had to try also.
So in this system, do you think that parents are also being tested?
Yeah, of course. I couldn't do shows, fashion weeks, because my exams and my children's exams coincided. So it was always a choice. And I was ICSE parent. So in the school for my sons, my two sons, with a gap of 2 years, it's really like you're really pushing. My sons were not as bright as him. There were tutors. There was constant pressure and prayer, both, you know, to make them get through to those exams between the teachers, the students, the parents. Everybody had to be involved.
There's no need to apologize, because that is the reality, I think, for most families, right? If you're doing, if your child is in the board exams, everybody's social life comes to a halt. Correct?
But it's because of the next. The reason for the pressure is because only 2 years matter, which is your 10th and your 12th, I think even 11th. What does the child do next? So the parent panics. First, it's the admissions, first to get them into schools and colleges. Then it is the class 10th. And then further, what happens? And the cutoffs are so high that even that stress, even for a regular good college, you start panicking. And like I know my brother, he has moved his children to, they're very young already, seeing my case, he has moved them to a school in the mountains, because that would, school is affiliated to a fantastic university. You know, in India. So he's already thinking so far, because that's the truth, because their kids won't have a good college after the school. Where will they go? So, and there's such limited numbers because of, I think, what do you have, like, what is that word, sorry, where 30% for reservation, right. I think. I don't know the exact stats, but that gives them a very low opportunity.
Yeah, but that, yeah, that's a separate debate. But so the divide, Atishi, just seems to be spreading and spreading. If government schools are starting to do better, now private schools are deciding to go in for IB and, you know, international baccalaureates and other things. So they're never, ever really going to catch up. But Varun points out that there's a difference between knowledge learning versus application skills. He says schools need to do more application skills, but there's just no time for this because there's so much of a syllabus to cover. Now the HRD minister said they're going to halve the syllabus. Is that the solution? Because then what are the kids learning?
See, I think first of all, Sarah, we need to understand that actually, despite having a large syllabus, most children are actually not learning anything.
But is halving the syllabus the solution? But is halving the syllabus the solution?
In many of the budget private schools across the country, I'm coming. So first of all, I think we need to understand that just having a large syllabus does not mean that the children are actually learning anything. As I said, the ASSA report every year tells us that children don't even know how to read and write. Number two, even in the high-performing schools, children just learning by rote and regurgitating it in the exam is not actually learning anything. I could not agree more with my co-panelist. I think that we really need to shift our focus from just gathering and downloading more and more information into the children's mind into how children can actually analytically apply this knowledge. We live in this world of smartphones and Google where any kind of information is available sort of within seconds to anyone. We don't need to memorize information anymore. And it's for this reason that in Delhi government for the past couple of years, we have been looking to reform at least till 8th standard the examination system to make it more application based.
But C.B. Sharma, let me play devil's advocate over here. It just sounds, are we at one level just mollycoddling the kids, the young students, the youth too much? Because everyone says, you know, marks aren't important, or at least that's what we try and tell kids. Marks aren't important, but let's be real. In a country like ours, we're talking about the shortages. You said the supply of colleges is so little. Marks are important.
Marks
I hate
are
to
important.
Say it.
Yes, marks are important. And
at least they open doors for you.
Yes, but I don't think that we should have stuck to the marks system all these years. I mean, in the meantime, we had shifted to grading. And percentile should be the process of admissions. We are trying to find a solution, or we are discussing schooling without taking into consideration the lacuna of the higher education. Higher education has not thought enough. They are admitting students only on the basis of marks and not percentile. We should have shifted to grading system and put a large number of students within a bracket. Let the colleges choose the best and for the purpose that they are taking admission. We have not done that. That's a problem. But I would also like to say that I chair the National Institute of Open Schooling. There are just two central boards, the CBSE and the NIOS, I must say. We are the two central government boards. I head the one which is non-formal. And I don't really, even though I am a distance educator and I head the non-formal board of schooling, non-formal schooling or school is schooling or homeschooling is not really the answer. Child must be with peer group, play with them, fight with them, learn to live together and not be alone at home. Fine, I would congratulate the parents who are doing this. I know some more parents who do this.
We'll
but that's not the normal method of a child growing in a peer group where he or she learns to compete, to fight, to play, to smile and everything. You would suddenly put your child at the age of 18 in a college where he or she doesn't know how to cope with peer group.
But if the normal is so dissatisfying for parents, would you like to respond to that?
Actually, homeschooler schooling concept is sometime termed as it is like putting child in isolation, but that's not the case. Mm-hmm. My kids go to so many other activities where they even have got a very, very large friend circle than what they would have in the school.
No, but my question is, if you were satisfied with the education your child was getting in a regular school, private or government,
right,
would you homeschool your child?
No, why should I?
So you're doing it because you're dissatisfied with the system.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
Fine. So, see, you should not justify homeschooling because they are doing just homeschooling because schools have failed. They are not able to find a school where they can put their child and be happy. I remember taking my child to a school and I was asked this question, why do you want to put your child in my school? And I said, I don't care about learning. I would take care of my child's learning. I want him to be happy in your school for the 6 hours that you would keep my child. And he must be with his peer group. And he learned to live together. That was important. See, schools are not always expected only to transfer knowledge or information, right? Rote learning. And also, for the homeschooling or the non-formal schooling, what the Delhi government has done, I have taken admission of 60,000 Delhi school children because schools threw them out. And as it was mentioned, they failed twice. We are taking care of them. I have organized from the NIOS their special classes in the government schools. I must congratulate the secretary, Mrs. Srivastava, who approached us and said, please do that for us. We have adopted various methods of teaching. Teacher, media, home, and other means. They have other means of studying. You must put your time into children. Every child doesn't learn the way we do it in a classroom. Some children learn better through their
Atishi, I think, wants to come in.
Yeah.
Sir, I just wanted to clarify one point, that these children were not thrown out of school. I think
2 years they failed, madam. Right? And then the Delhi government had no option but to put them in open schooling. Punya Srivastava approached me and said, please start your centers in our schools. And we have done it.
Sir, exactly. We approached National Institute of Open Schooling precisely because of the fact that by the time these children reached class 9, having been through the schooling system for 8 years and not having learned enough, that
yet
is the
being
reason
promoted
why
year
we
after
decided
year
to go towards open schooling.
Because there was
and
no detention theory.
Issue that,
and that was reversed by the CAPE.
And this CAPE is decide- an issue faced. And this is an issue faced across the country. It's just that in Delhi's case, what happens is all Delhi government schools take CBSE exams. So this issue comes forward in 9th and 10th standard, but this is a reality that exists across the country. And in fact, this recent NAS survey that was done by MHRD, the National Achievement Survey, actually shows that Delhi probably has the highest learning levels across the country.
After
many other states,
Kendriya Vidyalaya and Navodaya Vidyalaya
are much. Yeah, absolutely. They are at much worse learning levels. And this is an issue that we as a country need to talk about more.
I quite agree. We have not thought enough about schooling. And we took a decision of no detention, which was very erroneous. The complete CAPE rejected it and we brought it back. The whole generation has passed the schooling without any detention, any test.
Absolutely.
The comprehensive evaluation should have been imposed only after it was given a good thought and training of teachers. We didn't do that. We take decisions about schooling without really examining it, and that has marred the system. We have done, let me give one more argument what we are discussing about. This moderation and spiking, it has started with moderation. Moderation is a very scientific process. CBSE does it very scientifically, I must tell you. As a sister board, I know what they do, what we do as NIOS. 3 days back, the NIOS secondary and senior secondary results were declared, there is no hallagulla. And 5 lakh students passed, half the number that CBSE does. Why did it not happen? Because those who are the who's who in the country are not with the NIOS. Who is studying with me? The girl who climbed Mount Everest without oxygen, a 14-year girl, is an NIOS student. Dhoni is an NIS student, Shekhar Dhawan is an NIS student, and those who want to do something different must go to homeschooling, and not the normal children who should be in a school and not able to give time to schooling. But don't promote open schooling, non-formal school education or homeschooling for all other children, because schooling is the normal process of growth of a child.
Okay, so Arjitin, come in here. So which came first? We're talking about moderation, we're talking about spiking. Which came first? Was it the grades inflation and then the high cutoffs in colleges? I mean, it feels like chicken in the egg situation.
I think before I answer your question, I just want to add to what Mr. Sharma said. We are just discussing over here class 10 or class 12 board results. But I think we need to look deeper into the entire 12 or 14 years of education. Now, what is happening in the other classes from, let's say, right from pre-primary to class 9, for say. So there, what most of the schools are doing and the teachers are doing, they are teaching to the test, because that is easy mm-hmm. to teach and easy to measure. So, and they are very much focused on the syllabus. Now, there is a technical difference and a very important one between syllabus and the curriculum. So we don't focus much on the curriculum, which is more fluid, which allows creativity to flow, which allows a lot of interactions, and what Mr. Sharma said, that there has to be collaboration, there has to be teamwork. So those things help. If you follow the curriculum, then the learning objectives are just met. But when you are just focusing on the syllabus, it is very narrow. So there lies in the problem. So when you are going up gradually up to the system, class 10, the results, accordingly stress comes in, because that is one, I would say, life-defining examination for you. It becomes so very important. But if you try to change the system right from the primary level and equip these teachers with the skill sets, because as an organization, we measure skills of teachers. And that is where, from where I am coming, there isn't enough those why questions being asked in the classroom. There isn't enough questions asked by the students from the classroom. And even the questions which are being asked, all are from the lower order thinking skills. Mm-hmm. That what and how, that's it. There's no why. So we are teaching the students what to think, but not how to think. So there lies a problem, I would say.
And all of this, Deepak Raheja, seems to be just so that we can shelter these kids, so that we can avoid depression, we can avoid suicides. Are we mollycoddling our kids too much? Are we making them too fragile and not being able to deal with the real world?
I would certainly think that the basic message being is education being is culminating into knowledge. And are we being able to give the right message to our children that the purpose of education is knowledge? Like my esteemed colleague said, being able to ask the right wise question, the ability for that knowledge to culminate into a wholesome personality where the child is able to work on the resilience and not mollycoddle or cushion them where the anxiety bearing capacity is so low that the drama in a lot of schools that happens, my principal colleague would agree, where parents make WhatsApp group and they are ready to pounce on teachers as to why the child was spoken to harshly. And in the ambit, the child begins to learn the ability to be able to manipulate between the school and between home and not really be able to face the challenges that are required with education. So I think the stress-bearing capacity, we are fearful that the child, it was really amusing, a WhatsApp video going viral where somebody from a particular state is thrown hosting a party with firecrackers and a media channel covering it, where it says, he claims that I'm hosting this party because my child has failed and I would not like to my child to take a wrong step. Now, what message are we imparting our children? Is this knowledge bringing up children which are resilient, which will be able to take up the challenges of real life, to be able to face and take things head on, to be able to become wholesome, complete individual, or be marred with psychological difficulties later on? So I do think that some standardization is required for a board, for an exam that's meant to cater to thousands and millions of students. There will have to be some standardization. And I think most of us who are from the education sector would agree that there is a fair amount of standardization in the marking of these exams also. They are objective, and one could have reasons to say why the person who scored 96 or 98 has scored 96 and the one who scored 92. But is this culminating into asking the wise question? Is it culminating into having the child understand that he has to grow up to face the challenges of society? He has not to grapple with being depressed or being stressed, because, I mean, being a psychiatrist, I sit in my OPD, and I often think that a lot of symptoms that people come with are not the luxuries that you will be able to be allowed yourself 20 years back. Mm. I mean, the parents would look you up in the eye and say, get ready, you've got to do it. It's not about just so many options which confuse you, you know. I mean, our parents used to talk straight. This is the path you must take. And now we are analyzing, and there are tests, and there are psychometry, and there are career counseling, and you want to go for career counseling not once, but you want to go 10 times. And you come back more confused. You're not sure still what you want to do. So what are we brewing? Are we? I think we are being able to say the right things. I think we are having the right dialogues. But I feel very sad that most of these dialogues are not culminating into the right message that we are taking to our children.
But we also have the other side of the story, where that India is the country with the highest number of suicide rates, especially amongst the youth. And according to government statistics, there's one child killing him or herself every hour in this country, and that's all.
I totally agree with that. But again, Sarah, you must know that this is multifactorial. We are just not producing the right milieu, the right environment, the right communication, the right parameters which will work on that resilience. And unfortunately, the education system is one contributant to it. It is not the entire canvas. It's one contributant. The society per se is the other major contributant. The way parenting is happening today, where we feel we can read books and we can Google, but I think it's there are many flip sides that are emerging, and these are going to culminate. I'm worried about a decade from now. I mean, I'm sorry if I'm sounding pessimistic. The kids are smarter today. The ability to multitask is a lot greater than what we exhibited 20 years back. But there are obvious challenges that we'll need to grapple with in terms of psychological morbidity, in terms of substance use, in terms of technology addiction, in terms of not really challenging the neuronal pathways to be able to create the right connections, where the not just the rote memory, as
and
we are
course,
saying, but also the
help,
analytical
the memory. Another show that we need to do, we've done some on these, is the lack of professional help in the country. We're
absolutely short when it comes to mental health.
Even our mental health budget is so low. But we
the
have
happiness
a,
has disappeared. The happiness has disappeared from the classrooms and the schools.
We have a parent actually joining us here who lost his child, Mr. Sharma. Thank you so much, Mr. Sharma. And you were listening to all of this. If you could just tell us your views then, because you've seen another year where results have come out, and again we've seen suicides. This doesn't seem to change.
Primarily, I feel, what is education? Let us first discuss. In the words of Swami Vivekananda, education is the manifestation of perfection which is already there in a child. We must understand, as one of the panelists just now said, I think he's a psychologist, very truly said, that there is a need of creation of the right milieu, the right ambience, because the objective of every school should be to develop, you know, the capacity of children in three areas. That is, ability to acquire knowledge, ability to acquire skills, and ability to acquire values. Because knowledge, skills, and values, these three things are equally important. Somehow, only cognitive development is being taken care of. As a result, a skill is something that has been left, like, you know, critical thinking skill, decision making skill, you know, skill of helping a child grapple with the situation. I mean, as we read, you know, if you read the foreword in any book, you'll find that the main objective of education or education system should be to develop the capacity of every child to deal with situations, I mean, there should be a link between outside the class experience and inside the class experience. Somehow.
So where does, how do we teach our, equip our kids to deal with failures? Mr. Raheja says, is it education, is it society, is it parenting, it's a mix of the three. Who bears the greatest role then?
I'll tell you that school plays the most important role, because, you know, the 6 hours of experience of a child is more impactful than 18 years of the experience that the child undergoes at home. And every word of the teacher spoken is treated as a word of Gita. I have been a principal for 12 years in private schools. I have been heading a government school for the past 3 years. Would I find that every word spoken by the teacher is treated with great respect? But somewhere I think there is a need of not having that selective approach of teachers to giving an opportunity to a child. What is happening in schools is that we are being very selective about giving an opportunity to a child. A child who has been academically very good will be sent for every occasion. That we are not doing in our school. Let me tell you, Delhi government has undergone a sea change. There has been a dramatic transformation, and I would say that I am feeling very much satiated after having joined the school for the past 3 years. I am enjoying every moment of it, and we are developing that ability.
We let Sunita respond to that, whether schools are most important. Parents putting the onus on the schools now. But I want to finish with you, sir, Mr. Sharma, first. So you've been in the system because you've been a principal. You just said that both private schools and government schools, you've also paid the highest price. You've been a victim of the system. So what would you say now? Because you see, there are what, 56,000 seats only in Delhi University, and over 90,000 students have gotten more than 90%. So where does it leave children like yours, I'm assuming, who didn't get 90?
Let me tell you, my child was one of the 10 toppers of the class, among top 10 students. But somewhere, you know, there are two categories of children. One category comprises those children who are introverted, the other categories of those who are extroverted, particularly the children who do not open up. There's a need of, you know, we must treat that child as an emergency case. You know, the entire system should be geared up to deal with such a child. And there are clear-cut symptoms. Symptoms are quite visible. We can see a child who is being keeping quiet, not speaking, though they may be academically very, very good, academically brilliant, but they are quite sentimental. They're impulsive. And particularly children committing suicides are the ones who are quite impulsive. Maybe it is a decision of a moment. They pass through a moment. Maybe if there is some intervention, in case of my child, had some issue, he waited at the principal's office, at the door of principal's office for nearly 10 minutes. He had something to share with the principal. Somehow that call was not attended because principal must have been on round or something. As a result, you know, there was no intervention. So because he could not get the timely intervention, and moreover, he was quite a talented child in other domains also. He was a good singer. If the children are given opportunities, it is not necessary that every time you talk about academics, time you talk about good marks.
Let's, Sunita, respond to the fact that parents often think that it's the school's responsibility. They are the biggest influencer on the child. And also, if you can respond to my conversation with Atishi, you know, private schools, you have better infrastructure, you have better student-teacher ratios, you have better trained teachers. Yet now, government schools for 2 years in a row doing better than private schools. How would you explain that?
So, let me take the first question first. To say that the 6 hours of school make for or is accountable for the whole of the child, I would never agree to that, because the whole of the child is formed in society, at home, from what the child gathers herself, and from what the school gives. Definitely, I would say the 6 hours of the school could be counted as 12 hours, because it has more impact. I agree with that. We do make an impact. The teacher means a lot. What the teacher says means a lot. And let me also clarify that schools are doing a lot more. In today's time, we are not only looking at just imparting the syllabus.
So parents and students have to take joint responsibility for the child. We're completely out of time, so you just need to give me a closing argument. It can't just be schools. Parents can't put the onus just on schools.
Not at all. They cannot. They cannot. I would say parents are equally responsible. I have parents in my office arguing, you have to give my child science.
And there's a thin line between overstepping.
The child has got 53% in science. And the parent says, my child will be an engineer. For what? There are thousands of avenues open. For what do they want to do that?
Can I add on a few words?
We're completely out of time, sir. So just if two sentences, if
what
you can.
What I have said is that school makes maximum impact, but there is, of course, very, very pivotal and crucial role of parents. Parents, of course, are there, but the greatest role is of school. There is no denying the fact.
So I think this is a good note to end on, because this is both a parent and a principal. Yeah. So he's seen both sides of the system, and he can speak knowledgeably on both. But the fact is that study after study has shown that the true indicator of economic development in a country is education and the well-being of its people and its youth. And we are completely failing our youth right now, seems to be the bottom line of the story. We're completely out of time. Thank you so much for joining us on We the People. Bye-bye.